Chapter 12. Kolya led Mushkin into Litany Street, not far away, to a cafe on the ground floor with a billiard room. Here, in a room apart, in the right-hand corner, Ardalion Alexandrovich was installed, as though an habitual visitor. He had a bottle on a little table before him, and was actually holding a copy of the Independence Beige in his hands. He was expecting Mushkin. He laid aside the newspaper as soon as he saw him and began a long and heated explanation, of which Mushkin, however, could make very little, for the general was already far from sober. "I haven't got 10 roubles," Mushkin cut him short. "But here is a note for 25. Change it and give me 15, or else I shall be left without a farthing myself."
"Oh, certainly, and you may be sure I'll do so immediately."
"I've come to you with a request, too, General. You've never been to Nastasia Philipovna's?"
"Me? Me never been? You say that to me? Just occasionally, my dear fellow. Several times," cried the General, in an excess of triumphant and complacent mockery. "But I broke off the acquaintance myself, for I don't wish to encourage an unseemly alliance. You've seen for yourself. You've been witness this morning. I've done all a father can do, a mild and intelligent father, that is. Now a very different father must come onto the scene, and then we shall see whether an old warrior who has served with honour will triumph over the intrigue, or whether a shameless cocotte shall force her way into an honourable family."
"I was going to ask you whether you could take me as a friend to Nastasia Philipovna's this evening. I must go today, but I don't know how I can get there. I was introduced today, but not invited. This evening she has a party. But I don't mind disregarding convention a little. I don't mind being laughed at, if only I can get in."
"That's precisely my own idea, my young friend," cried the General enthusiastically. "I didn't ask you to come on account of that trifle," he went on, appropriating the money, however, and putting it in his pocket. "I sent for you precisely to ask you to be my companion in an expedition to Nastasia Philipovna's, or rather an expedition against Nastasia Philipovna. General Ivolgin and Prince Mushkin. Oh, well, that striker. On the pretext of a civility on her name day, I will announce my will at last, indirectly, not straight out, but it will be just as effective as though directly. Then Gania will see for himself what he must do. He must choose between his father, who has seen honourable service, and so to say, and so on, or... But what will be must be. Your idea is a very happy one. At 9 o'clock we will start. We've plenty of time."
"Where does she live?"
"A long way from here. Close to the great theatre, at Mitovtsov's house. Almost in the square, on the first floor. It won't be a large party, though it is her name day, and it will break up early."
It was getting on in the evening. Mushkin sat listening and waiting for the General, who began an extraordinary number of anecdotes and did not finish one of them. On Mushkin's arrival, he asked for another bottle, and it took him an hour to finish it. Then he asked for a third, and finished it too. It may well be believed that by that time the General had narrated almost the whole of his history. At last Mushkin got up and said he could not wait any longer. The General emptied the last drops out of the bottle, stood up, and walked out of the room very unsteadily. Mushkin was in despair. He could not understand how he could have believed in him so foolishly. As a matter of fact, he never had believed in him. He had simply reckoned on the General as a means of getting to Nastasia Philipovna, even at the cost of some impropriety. But he had not anticipated anything very scandalous. The General turned out to be thoroughly drunk. He was overwhelmingly eloquent, and talked without ceasing, with feeling, and on the verge of tears. He insisted continually that the misbehaviour of all the members of his family had brought about their ruin, and that it was high time to put a stop to it. They reached Litany Street at last. It was still thawing. A warm, muggy, depressing wind whistled up and down the streets. Carriages splashed through the mud. The horses' hooves struck the flags with a metallic ring. Crowds of wet and dejected people slouched along the pavements, here and there a drunken man among them.
"Do you see those first floors lighted up?" said the General.
My old comrades live all about here, and I, who have seen more service and faced more hardships than any of them, I trudge on foot to the lodging of a woman of doubtful reputation. I, a man who has 13 bullets in his breast. You don't believe it? And yet it was solely on my account Dr. Pyrogov telegraphed to Paris and for a while abandoned Sevastopol at the time of the siege. And Neloton, the Paris court doctor, succeeded in obtaining a free pass in the name of science and got into the besieged city on purpose to examine me. The highest authorities are cognizant of the fact. Ah, that's the Ivolgin who has 13 bullets in him. Ah, that's how they speak of me. And do you see that house, Prince? In the first floor there lives Sokolovich, an old friend of mine, with his honourable and numerous family. That household and three families living the Nevsky Prospect and two in Morskaya make up my present circle. That is, of my personal acquaintances. Nina Alexandrovna resigned herself to circumstances long ago, but I still remember the past, and still refresh myself, so to speak, in the cultured society of my old comrades and subordinates who worship me to this day. That General Sokolovich, I haven't been to call on him for some little time, by the way, and haven't seen Anna Fyodorovna. You know, dear Prince, when one doesn't entertain oneself, one is apt insensibly to drop out of visiting others. But yet, you don't seem to believe me. But why not introduce the son of the dearest friend of my youth and companion of my childhood into this delightful family? General Ivolgin and Prince Mushkin. You will see an exquisite girl, not one, indeed, two, even three ornaments of Petersburg and of society. Beauty, culture, enlightenment. The woman question, poetry, all united in a happy fairy combination, to say nothing of a dowry of 80,000 roubles in hard cash for each of them, which is never a drawback in spite of any feminist or social questions. In fact, I certainly must introduce you. General Ivolgin and Prince Mushkin. A sensation, in fact.
At once. Now? But you've forgotten, began Mushkin.
I've forgotten nothing. Nothing. Come along. This way. Up this magnificent staircase. Oh, I wonder why there's no porter, but it's a holiday, and the porter has taken himself off. They've not dismissed the drunken fellow yet. This Sokolovich is indebted for the whole happiness of his life and career to me. To me and no one else. But here we are.
Mushkin made no further protest, and to avoid irritating the general, he followed him submissively, confidently hoping that General Sokolovich and all his family would gradually evaporate like a mirage and turn out to be non-existent, so that they could quietly retrace their steps downstairs. But to his horror, this hope began to fail him. The general led him up the stairs like a man who really had friends living there, and every minute he put in some biographical or topographical detail with mathematical exactitude. At last, when they had reached the first floor and stopped on the right before the door of a luxurious flat, and the general had hold of the bell, Mushkin made up his mind to make his escape. But one strange circumstance held him for a moment.
"You've made a mistake, General," he said. "The name on the door is Kulikov, and you want Sokolovich."
"Kulikov?" "Kulikov means nothing. The flat is Sokolovich's, and it's Sokolovich I shall ask for. Hang Kulikov!" "Oh, here's someone coming."
The door was opened indeed. A footman peeped out and announced that the master and mistress were not at home.
"What a pity! What a pity! Just how things always happen!"
Ardalion Alexandrovich repeated several times with profound regret.
"Tell them, my boy, that General Ivolgin and Prince Mushkin wished to present their respects in person and regret extremely, extremely—"
At that moment, from an inner room, another person peeped towards the open door, apparently a housekeeper, or perhaps a governess, a lady about 40 in a dark dress. She approached inquisitively and mistrustfully, hearing the names of General Ivolgin and Prince Mushkin.
"Maria Alexandrovna is not at home," she pronounced, scrutinizing the general carefully. "She has gone out with the young lady, Alexandra Mihailovna, to her grandmother's."
"Alexandra Mihailovna, too! Good heavens, how unfortunate! Would you believe it, madam, that is always my luck? I humbly beg you to give my compliments, and beg Alexandra Mihailovna to, in fact, give her my earnest wishes for what she wished for herself on Thursday evening, listening to a ballad of Chopin's. She will remember. My earnest wishes, General Ivolgin and Prince Mushkin."
"I won't forget," said the lady with more confidence, as she bowed them out.
As they went downstairs, the general continued with undiminished warmth, regretting that they had not found them in, and that Mushkin had missed making a delightful acquaintance.
"Do you know, my dear boy, I am something of a poet in soul. Have you noticed that? But I do believe we may have called at the wrong flat," he concluded suddenly and quite unexpectedly. "The Sokolovitches, I remember now, live in a different house, and I fancy, too, they are in Moscow now. Yes, I made a slight mistake, but no matter."
"There's only one thing I want to know," Mushkin observed disconsolately. "Must I give up reckoning on you altogether? And hadn't I better go alone?"
"Give up? Reckoning? Alone? But whatever for, when this is for me a vital undertaking, on which so much of the future of my family depends? No, my young friend, you don't know Ivolgin. To say Ivolgin is to say a rock. You can build on Ivolgin as you can on a rock. That's what they used to say in the squadron in which I began my service. I've only just to call in for 1 minute on the way at the house where my soul has for years found consolation after my trials and anxieties."
"You want to go home?"
"No. I want to go and see Madame Terentyev, the widow of Captain Terentyev, one of my subordinate officers, and a friend of mine, too. Here at Madame Terentyev's I am refreshed in spirit, and here I bring my daily cares and my family troubles. And as today I am weighed down by a heavy moral burden, I
am afraid I was awfully stupid to have troubled you this evening," murmured Mushkin. "Besides, you'll—goodbye."
"But I cannot! I really cannot let you go, my young friend," cried the general. "A widow, a mother of a family— and she draws from her heart strings which re-echo through all my being. A visit to her is a matter of 5 minutes. I don't stand on ceremony in the house. I almost live there. I will wash, make myself a little tidy, and then we'll drive to the great theatre. I assure you I need you the whole evening. Here, in this house, here we are. Ah, Kolya! You're here already. Is Marfa Borisovna at home, or have you only just come?"
"Oh, no," answered Kolya, who had just met them in the gateway. "I've been here a long time, with Ippolit. He is worse. He was in bed this morning. I've just been to a shop to get some cards. Marfa Borisovna is expecting you. Only, father, you are in a state," Kolya finished up, watching the way his father walked and stood. "Well, come along."
The meeting with Kolya induced Mushkin to accompany the general to Marfa Borisovna's, but only for 1 minute. Mushkin wanted Kolya. He made up his mind to give up the general in any case, and could not forgive himself for having rested his hopes on him. They were a long time climbing up to the fourth story by a back staircase.
"Do you want to introduce the prince?"
Kolya asked on the way.
"Yes, my dear, to introduce him. General Ivolgin and Prince Mushkin. But what is... How is... Marfa Borisovna?"
"Do you know, father, you'd better not go. She'll give it to you. There's been no sign of you for 3 days, and she's expecting the money. Why did you promise her money? You're always doing things like that. Now you've got to get out of it."
On the fourth story, they stopped before a low door. The general was evidently downcast and pushed Mushkin in front of him.
"I'll stay here," he muttered. "I want to surprise her."
Kolya went in first. The general's surprise missed fire, for a lady peeped out at the door. She was heavily rouged and painted, wore slippers and a dressing jacket, had her hair plaited in pigtails, and was about 40. As soon as the lady saw him, she promptly screamed,
"Here he is, the base viperish man! My heart misgave me, it was he!" "Come in, this is all right," the general muttered to Mushkin, still trying to laugh it off with a guileless air. But it was not all right. They had hardly passed through a dark, low-pitched passage into a narrow sitting room, furnished with half a dozen rush-bottom chairs and two card tables, when the lady of the house returned at once to the charge in a peevish tone of habitual complaint.
"Aren't you ashamed? Aren't you ashamed, you savage and tyrant of my family, tyrant and monster? You have robbed me of everything. You have sucked me dry, and are still not content, you vampire. I will put up with you no longer, you shameless, dishonourable man."
"Marfa Borisovna, Marfa Borisovna, this is Prince Mushkin. General Ivolgin and Prince Mushkin," muttered the general, trembling and overwhelmed.
"Would you believe it?" said the captain's widow, turning suddenly to Mushkin. "Would you believe that this shameless man has not spared my orphan children? He's robbed us of everything, carried off everything, sold and pawned everything, and left us nothing. What am I to do with your IOUs, designing and unscrupulous man? Answer, you deceiver! Answer, you devouring monster! How am I to nourish my orphan children? And here he comes in drunk and can't stand on his legs. What have I done to call down the wrath of God? Answer, base and hideous hypocrite!"
But the general was not equal to the occasion.
"Marfa Borisovna, 25 rubles, all I can, thanks to a generous friend. Prince, I was cruelly mistaken. Such is life. But now, excuse me, I feel weak,"
said the general, standing in the middle of the room and bowing in all directions.
"I am weak, forgive me. Lenotchka, a pillow, dear child."
Lenotchka, a girl about 8 years old, ran at once to fetch a pillow and put it on the hard sofa covered with ragged American leather. The general sat down, intending to say much more, but as soon as he touched the sofa, he turned on his side facing the wall and sank into the sleep of the just. Marfa Borisovna mournfully and ceremoniously motioned Mushkin to a chair at one of the card tables. She sat down facing him with her right cheek on her hand and began looking at Mushkin in silence. Three little children, two girls and a boy, of whom Lenotchka was the eldest, went up to the table, laid their arms on it, and all three also stared at Mushkin. Kolya made his appearance from the next room.
"I'm very glad I've met you here, Kolya," said Mushkin to him. "Can't you help me? I must be at Nastasia Philipovna's. I asked Ardalion Alexandrovich to take me there, but you see he is asleep. Will you take me there, for I don't know the streets nor the way? I have the address, though, by the Great Theatre, Matovtsov's house."
"Nastasia Philipovna? But she's never lived in the Great Theatre, and father's never been at Nastasia Philipovna's, if you care to know. It's strange you should have expected anything of him. She lives near Vladimirsky Street, at the Five Corners. It's much nearer here. Do you want to go at once? It's 9:30. If you like, I'll take you there."
Mushkin and Kolya went out at once. Mushkin, alas, had nothing with which to pay for a cab, so they had to walk.
"I wanted to introduce you to Ippolit," said Kolya. "He is the eldest son of the widow in the dressing jacket. He was in the other room. He is ill and has been in bed all day. But he's so queer. He's frightfully touchy, and I fancied he'd feel ashamed with you because of your coming at such a moment. I'm not so much ashamed as he is. Anyway, because it's my father, but his mother. It does make a difference, for there's no dishonour for the male sex in such a position. But maybe it's only a prejudice that one sex is more privileged than the other in such cases. Ippolit is a splendid fellow, but he is a slave to certain prejudices."
"You say he is in consumption?"
"Yes, I think the best thing for him would be to die soon. If I were in his place, I should certainly wish I were dead. He is sorry for his brother and sisters, the little ones you saw. If it were possible, if we only had the money, he and I would have taken a flat together and have left our families. That's our dream. And you know, when I told him just now what happened to you, he flew into a regular rage and said that a man who accepts a blow without fighting a duel is a scoundrel. But he is frightfully irritable. I'd given up arguing with him. So Nastasia Philipovna invited you at once, did she?"
"That's just it. She didn't."
"How is it you are going, then?"
cried Kolya, and he stopped short in the middle of the pavement.
"And in such clothes! You know it's an evening party."
Oh, "Goodness knows how I shall go in. If they let me in, all right. If they don't, there's no help for it. As for clothes, what can I do?
Have you some object in going?
Or are you only going just pour passer le temps in honourable society?"
"No, I really... That is, I am going with an object. It's difficult to put into words, but...
Oh, well, what it is exactly is your affair. What I care to know is that you are not simply inviting yourself to a party in the fascinating society of cocottes, generals and moneylenders. If it had been so, you must excuse me, Prince. I should have laughed at you and despised you. Honest people are terribly scarce here, so that there's really nobody one can respect. One can't help looking down on people, and they all insist on respect, Faria especially. And have you noticed, Prince, that we are all adventurers nowadays, and particularly among us in Russia, in our beloved country? And how it's all come about, I don't understand. The foundation seems so firm, but what do we see now? Everyone is talking and writing about it, showing it up. In Russia, everyone is showing things up. Our parents are the first to go back on themselves, and are ashamed of their old morals. You have a father in Moscow teaching his son not to stick at anything to get money. We know it from the papers. Just look at my general. What has he come to? And yet, you know, it seems to me that my general is an honest man. Yes, I really think so. It's nothing but irregularity and wine. It really is so. I feel sorry for him, in fact, only I'm afraid to say so, because everyone laughs. But I really am sorry for him. And what is there in them, the sensible people? They are all money grubbers, every one of them. Ippolit justifies usury. He says it's right. He talks about an economic upheaval, the ebb and flow of capital. Confound them. It vexes me to hear it from him. But he is exasperated. Only fancy, his mother, the captain's widow, you know, gets money from the general and lends it him at high interest. It's a horrible disgrace. And do you know that my mother, Nina Alexandrovna, helps Ippolit with money, clothes and everything, and provides for the children partly too, through Ippolit, because they are neglected. And Varya helps too. There, you see. You say that there are no strong, honest people, that we are all money grubbers. But there you have strong people, your mother and Varya. Don't you think to help like that, and in such circumstances, is a proof of moral strength?
Varya does it from vanity, to show off, so as not to be inferior to Mother. But Mother really is. I respect it in her. Yes, I respect that, and think it right. Even Ippolit feels it, and he is bitter against almost everyone. At first he laughed and called it low on my mother's part, but now he begins to feel it sometimes.
So you call that strength? I shall make a note of that.
Ganya doesn't know it, or he would call it conniving at things.
Ganya doesn't know, then?
There seems to be a great deal Ganya doesn't know, said Mushkin, pondering. Do you know, Prince, I like you very much. I can't forget what happened to you this afternoon.
And I like you very much too, Kolya.
Listen, how do you intend to live here? I shall soon get a job and be earning something. Let us live together, you and me and Ippolit. We'll take a flat and we'll let the general come and see us.
I shall be delighted. But we'll see. I feel very much upset just now.
What?
Are we there?
Is this the house?
What a magnificent entrance.
And a hall porter. Well, Kolya, I don't know what will come of it.
Mushkin stood still as though in bewilderment.
You will tell me about it tomorrow. Don't be too frightened. God give you good luck. For I think as you do about everything. Goodbye. I'll go back there and tell Ippolit. There's no doubt she will see you. Don't be uneasy. She's very original. It's the first floor on this staircase. The porter will show you.